We don't normally have a camera in a radio studio. Radio, it's about words. I don't want people glued to a video screen when it's all about the words. But for today's show, our producer, Larry, he insisted. So, Bubba Neert Live, let's do it.
Warning, warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Your Life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Your Life. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. A debate from a few years back has resurfaced, and we're going to air the audio from a British talk show, Unbelievable, between Peter Hitchens. You know that name? He is the famous Christian writer who happens to be the brother of the famed atheist, the late Christopher Hitchens, well, former atheist anyway. Now, Peter is strongly abortion versus pro-abortion Adam Rutherford. He's a British geneticist, also an atheist. Justin Brierley is the host of Unbelievable. So with three voices on the radio plus mine, you'll just need to focus to keep them straight. It's not that hard for the brightest audience in the country. Now, Hitchens, Peter Hitchens, he made an assertion that on television they never show an abortion, and he later corrected that because in the UK in 2004, sure enough, they did show an abortion. His point still is valid and very powerful. In America, ABC, NBC, CBS, they're not going to show the public what an abortion actually is. But 10 years before the Brits did, here in Colorado, we did. We've got the Denver Post TV Week, and we'll look at this at that point in their debate. And I'll read the ad that we ran in the Denver Post TV Week when Charlton Heston introduced the Eclipse of Reason, a very powerful broadcast event. But right now, let's get on with this debate between Peter Hitchens and Adam Rutherford on Justin Brierley's Unbelievable, Peter Hitchens versus Adam Rutherford.
You also, at various points, mention abortion, which I'm guessing is, for you, another example of one of these issues, because of what you saw in the Soviet system as well.
Well, it was the main method of contraception. It was, I think at the point that I was living there, the number of abortions outnumbered the number of live births. And it seems to me to be plainly wrong to kill a living creature. But it's one of those things where people say, oh, well, you don't need the Ten Commandments to tell you how to behave. Well, I have to tell you that if the Ten Commandments are removed from this, then people will immediately say, oh, no, abortion is not murder. It's just a blob of jelly. This thing doesn't matter. It's not a life. It doesn't count, because people will always, just as they will do the same with the atrocious massacre of German civilians by Bomber Command during the 1940s, they'll always say, oh, that was all right, that was morally justified. People will always morally justify murder when they think it suits them, and they will keep on doing it, unless you have an absolute code which prevents it.
Okay, so when we do away with this absolute code, which secularism would do away with, we increasingly open the door to the ill effects Peter's suggesting of that we see in society.
So you're suggesting that if we have no God in society, then abortions will become the main method of contraception?
Well, they virtually have done. Ever since the abortion law reform of 1967 was predicated on the idea that that there would be very few abortions, that it would prevent the illegal abortions taking place in back.
Stop the tape. Peter Hitchens just mentioned Britain's abortion law in 1967. I'd like to point out that the death penalty has been banned in many countries right before abortion was legalized. In Great Britain, in fact, we could show you a chart from American Right to Life's website in their article, Abortion and the Death Penalty. In Great Britain, their last execution was 1964, and then they legalized abortion in 1967. And this is a pattern. Canada outlawed execution for typical murders in 1976. They legalized abortion in 1988. In the U.S., the Supreme Court banned the death penalty in 1972. In 1973, they permitted the killing of innocent children. So this is not unusual. Even in the Soviet Union, you go back, they banned execution in 1917, and they legalized abortion in 1920. So there's a pattern, because God said, do not kill people who should not die and keep people alive who should not live. There's a life and death go together with killing the guilty and protecting the innocent.
Prevent the illegal abortions taking place in back streets, which everyone's worried about, and that it was a last resort which would only be undertaken when two doctors had consented to it. Year by year, the numbers of abortions go up and up and up, and the numbers of abortions which actually are performed on people who've had abortions before, not just once or twice, but three or four times, goes up and up, because it's a backstop. If people can't be bothered to use contraception and they find themselves pregnant, they have an abortion. And the more of it there is, the more of it there is. It's statistically demonstrable. Even with immense amounts of propaganda about condoms distributed to people at incredibly young ages and the morning after pill and all the rest of it, abortion carries on going up. It seems to me to be completely demonstrable that the legalization of abortion has led to more of it. And will continue to lead to more.
So let me just get this straight. So in your, I'm not quite sure what you're proposing as a model for how things should be, but one of the things that you are suggesting is that all forms of abortion is illegal. Is that is
well,
that right?
Well, as a matter of fact, I mean, I personally feel that and would say that abortion under all circumstances is wrong. But as a matter of fact, the law before 1967 was based upon a court case in which a doctor had aborted a child who'd been raped by three soldiers just around the corner from Whitehall in, I think, 1938. And he was cleared by the court on the basis that his action had been justifiable. And on that basis, it was possible for people to have abortions under extreme circumstances, which I think was probably a sensible compromise.
Stop the tape. So Peter Hitchens says, if it were up to me personally, I'd ban all abortion, but it's a sensible compromise. I'm so thankful that in America, even the pro-life movement, which is different from the abolition movement, but even the pro-life movement is recognizing that you don't kill a child for the crime of the father. The Bible makes that as a bedrock principle. And it turns out that abortion for rape and incest, that was the beginning of the Holocaust. That's what started it. And calling that sensible is not how you're going to end it. There are no sensible lynchings of black men or no sensible gassings of Jewish children. When you have abortion for rape and incest, they're both the same crime, but incest even more grotesque. Think about abortion for incest. It emboldens a criminal to rape his young relative. That's what it does. It backfires from what the left thinks. It helps the criminal, the rapist, escape from being caught. It tempts him to repeat his crime, and it's not compassionate because it kills a baby and increases the woman's suffering. Very often, the rapist is the one who brings the young girl to the abortion mill, to Planned Parenthood, and very often they send her back home with her rapist. Abortion for rape and incest is not sensible, it's cruel.
Circumstances, which I think was probably a sensible compromise. Those doctors who wanted to perform abortions hated the law because it put the burden of proof on them that they had actually acted in a genuine emergency. So there are two issues here. One, the personal moral one. One, the issue of just how far society can legislate. Furlong has said it's wrong. There's no circumstance under which an adoption wouldn't be better than an abortion. But if people really, really feel that an abortion is essential, I suppose you could leave room for it. But the existing law, which effectively licenses abortion on demand, is a criminal act, as far as I can say.
There's no circumstances. Could you just repeat that? There's no circumstances where abortion is acceptable.
There's no circumstances in which I can see where abortion is preferable to adoption.
So, for example, in the case where the mother's life was at risk or the child was going to be born with severe abnormalities, in those situations, acceptable or not?
Well, I think mother's life being at risk is a difficult problem. I don't know whether you can give me any instances of it where an abortion would be the only way of dealing with the problem.
But I can't give any specific
instances. No, I'm not sure it's raised all the time, and I'm not quite sure what these positions are. I mean, cesarean section is extremely easy these days. I don't know of any circumstance, and the response to a baby being imperfect doesn't seem to me to be to kill it. We're not entitled to do so. And that
stop the tape. Stop the tape. Abortion for the life of the mother. We're so thankful that the article that I wrote on that topic for American Right to Life comes up very high in searches on Google for life of the mother. ABC News reported that 40% of ectopic pregnancies are not ectopic pregnancies. That's where the baby is developing not in the womb but the fallopian tube or even outside of the fallopian tube. We have an article on American Right to Life, Personhood, Ectopic Personhood, a phenomenal article. We'll link to that on our show page. Fabulous article. But the main point about the life of the mother is that you don't stop caring for the mother long enough to kill the baby. Like with what's called a partial birth abortion, if you're removing the baby, you're delivering the baby by cesarean section or not, in order to save the mother's life, let's say she's suffering from preeclampsia, you don't stop caring for the mother long enough to kill the baby. You don't do that. You treat both the mother and the child as the patient. You do not kill the baby to save the mother, just as you don't kill the mother to save the baby. If the mother is actually in a crisis, then yes, you deliver the baby and you care for both. If the baby dies, that's a tragedy, but that's much different than intentional homicide.
We're not entitled to do so, and that you wouldn't do it if an imperfect child existed outside the womb. We all know which regime it was that used to massacre imperfect people after they'd been born. I don't myself see a fundamental difference between killing someone because they're imperfect in the womb and killing someone because they're imperfect outside the womb. Maybe you do. I don't know what it is.
Let me ask you this question. I'm assuming that you believe that a person that's at the point of conception, when a sperm fertilizes an egg, that becomes a person.
That seems to me to be the only sustainable view. You can't find, I don't think science has been able to find, any other point at which you can define the beginning of life.
No, there isn't a consensus on the beginning of a human.
It's not possible. It seems to me to be the point at which it's...
So what character...
Stop the tape. There's no consensus. The University of Chicago did a study in 2018 of biologists. They asked biologists from over 1,000 institutions around the world, when does human life begin? 95% said it was at fertilization. That's consensus. The other 5% are so obsessed with dismembering unborn children that they lie about the most fundamental science in their own field of expertise. Also, you've seen perhaps what scientists did at Northwestern University when they have photographic documentation of the flash of light that occurs at the moment of fertilization. It's called the zinc spark. It is absolutely stunning.
It's not possible. It seems to me to be the point at which it's...
So what characteristics of a single-cell fertilized egg are human?
Well, all of them, as far as I can see.
What, they are capable of communication, they're capable of social interactions, they're capable of forming independent views.
That's not the characteristics of the human. This will grow into a human being unless it is prevented...
Stop the tape! What a terrible statement by Peter Hitchens. I appreciate the guy, but what a mistake to say that the fetus will grow into a human being unless prevented by violence. No, the fetus is a human being. It's got 46 chromosomes, human DNA. Its parents are human beings. It's not a canine. It's a living human being from the moment of conception. And as a Christian, Peter Hitchens should also recognize that the soul, spirit, they don't get added later, but God enabled us to procreate when the father and the mother come together. And at that moment of conception, that moment of fertilization, when 95% of biologists from 1,000 institutions have said, 1,000 institutions, that yes, that is the beginning of biological life. By the way, how many biologists was that? 5,500 biologists.
Will grow into a human being unless it is prevented from doing so by violence.
So what about, so are you also opposed to things like in vitro fertilization?
I'm confused about it, to be honest, and don't claim any expertise on it. I think, I mean, I have Roman Catholic friends who constantly try and persuade me to take stern positions on it. I don't, because I don't know enough about it.
Stop the tape. Bringing human life into existence is not criminal, but recklessly discarding the children that are brought into existence in IVF clinics and just throwing them in the trash, that's homicide. That's criminal. Let's continue.
I don't, because I don't know enough about it, but it does seem to me to be self-evident that killing unborn babies is wrong. And every opportunity I have to say it, I'll say it, because it just seems to me to be so blindingly obvious and such an immense wickedness in our society that if I didn't say it, even if it disadvantaged me to say it, then I would be failing in my duty.
I mean, you've asked for clarification on Peter's position. I'd be interested in hearing your position here, Adam, because am I to take it from what you've been saying that you believe what science shows us about the cell, indeed I think you presented a whole programme on television about the cell, shows that we can have good reason for believing that life doesn't begin at this stage, that it is in effect then the progress we've made in the last 50 years that gives us good reason for believing that there isn't any damage being done when we abort a child. I don't know, the term currently in the UK is what the cut-off term is
24 weeks legally.
Do you believe there's a sort of, that's justified scientifically, that we can come to these conclusions not because of a morality in a book, but because we've scientifically looked into this and decided, well, this is the moral framework?
There's two different questions at stake here. The first is, at what point does a fertilized egg become a person? And there is no scientific consensus on this. There is no scientific definition of what that could possibly be.
You're slipping the
stop
from...
Stop the tape. Peter Hitchens will hear his response. But that fertilized ovum, at that moment of conception, you have a living human being. And these people are not smart enough even to assert that a living human being is different than a person. A person is a living human being.
There is no scientific consensus on this. There is no scientific definition of what that could possibly be.
You're slipping, from human to a person. You're trying to define human not as a physically, objectively existing thing, but as a social being, which, of course, no one in a womb can be. So presumably you're not a person until...
Stop the tape. We have to clarify that. The baby in the womb... Remember the classic example of John the Baptist, who leapt for joy when he was in his mother Elizabeth's womb at 6 months of gestation, when Mary walks in, and in her womb is the baby Jesus. Babies get to know their mothers. They could distinguish their mothers from a nurse when they're born. They learn songs. They learn melodies from their mother when their mother sings to them. Babies are born knowing morality, knowing physics, knowing basic rudimentary math. And we've covered this on Real Science Radio. So he's also, babies are alive to God from the moment of conception. And that's social.
So presumably you're not a person until the moment you're born, by that definition, but you're still a human.
Well,
I mean, this kind of sophistry is what you get when people want to justify killing for their own convenience. An abortion is conducted almost invariably
for the convenience of Adam to finish there.
Yeah.
But there, as I said, there isn't a scientific consensus on it. The reason we have 24 weeks as the cutoff point, unless there are medical reasons to extend beyond that, is because there's no scientific evidence that younger fetuses than 24 weeks have an increased survival rate.
Stop the tape.
When they talk about consensus, right, on global warming, they're such hypocrites. when virtually all biologists around the world acknowledge that human life begins at fertilization. But remember the claim, atheists, they still make it, that life was created in the laboratory in 1952. We have a great graphic at AmericanRTL.org/Darwin, and it shows what many pro-aborts and atheists claim. They claim that scientists made life in the lab, and what they made were acids. They made a few amino acids, and they look at a baby. Think of the baby, the teardrop baby, you know, that little baby being held in its sack, and there's that tiny little baby, and they say that the few acids were life, but the baby is not life. They're hypocrites, and they're hypocrites because they want to kill the innocent because they're in rebellion against God.
Than 24 weeks have an increased survival rate.
Listen to the word fetus. It's a fetus. It's a nice Latin word. It's dehumanized already. It's not a baby, it's a fetus.
That's correct.
It's dehumanized so you can kill it.
It's not a baby.
That's what killers always do. They dehumanize their victim before they kill it.
A fetus is not a baby.
Not a baby. Okay, you hear that claim? It's not a baby? Let's go to the BBC this year, 2019, and we'll hear their interview with Leroy Carhart. Just a short clip. Now, he is one of the infamous late-term abortionists in America. He's been killing babies for decades. Let's hear this short excerpt.
What counts as a medical need, in your view? I mean, if the woman is really stressed about her pregnancy,
has to get more to the point of depression, not just stress. And it fit within my confidence of what we could do safely, I would do that.
Right up until when? Late 38 weeks, 39 weeks?
I don't know.
That you're not comfortable saying?
I'm not going to say that. Yeah. To the fetus, it makes no difference whether it's born or not born. The baby has no input in this as far as I'm concerned.
But it's interesting that you use the word baby, because a lot of abortionists won't use that. They'll use the word fetus because they don't want to acknowledge that there's a life.
I think that it is a baby, and I use it with the patients.
And you don't have a problem with
Absolutely not.
A baby?
I have no problem if it's in the mother's uterus.
So you have a late-term abortionist who's come face-to-face with each child he's killed, thousands of children for decades. He knows that they're babies. The moms know that they're babies. For thousands of years, the human race has known that inside the mother's womb is a baby. Sometimes the baby is premature, comes out early, and guess what? It's still a baby. We see 4D ultrasound where the baby is sucking his thumb, grabbing his toes. When they're twins, they play with each other. Jacob and Esau, they wrestled with each other in their mother's womb. Of course, it's a baby.
Fetus is not a baby, and there's no possible way that you could argue that is a baby.
Right.
Well, try
it. It's extraordinary, isn't it? That the one thing you can show anything, you can show anything on British television, any kind of disemboweling, almost any kind of sexual activity, you can play any word. They were using four letter words on the 10 o'clock news on the BBC last night, but the one thing you cannot show on television is film of an abortion and what it involves, because it shows quite plainly that what is being destroyed is a human person.
Well, that's also not true, though that has been shown on TV, and I've worked with fetuses that have been aborted. I can't quote specific documentaries, but they do exist. I have seen it on TV. Also,
Stop the tape. So Peter Hitchens later acknowledged that the BBC Channel 4, they did air an abortion. In 2004, as I mentioned, here we have the Denver Post TV Week from 10 years earlier, 1994. Now, Hitchens' point is still powerful, that network TV, they do everything they can to hide from the public what an abortion is, and only if they're up against the wall will they show any details at all. But here in the Denver Post, we took out an ad, and I'd like to read this ad to you. We aired it on a Thursday night, 10 o'clock, 10 to 11, on Bob and Yurt Live, Channel 53. This was full broadcast, full power broadcast plus cable. And here's what the ad says. A medical procedure the networks won't show you. Not suitable for minors. Warren Hearn, Boulder abortionist, advertises in the U.S. West Yellow Pages, on page 2, no less, A for abortion, that he will terminate unborn children at 6 months of age. Quote, outpatient abortion through 24 weeks. How do you kill a 24-week unborn baby? It is difficult because the baby is tenacious and clings to life. Tonight at 10 p.m. on TV 53, cable and over the air, Charlton Heston introduces a video of a second trimester termination. Murder. With a miniature video camera inside the mom and another camera outside, an actual abortion is captured on film. That in and of itself is a nightmare. The networks will not air this footage. Tonight, see what it really is that Pat Schroeder, U.S. Representative from Denver, pro-abort Democrat, that she supports. Baby Natalie. Baby Natalie, Colorado's smallest baby at just 15 ounces, was born at about 24 weeks. Was she a living human being? For months prior to her birth, she was sleeping, dreaming, sucking her thumb, and literally getting to know her mother. Rated R. You can see what the media does not want you to see tonight at 10. You can see the procedure that Colorado Governor Roy Romer defends as legitimate. Planned Parenthood sells the most abortions in America. It is not surprising that they support killing handicapped unborn children, since their founder, Margaret Sanger, wrote that the handicapped are, quote, the dead weight of human waste, unquote. Handicapped are dead weight. Complaining of the cost of caring for the handicapped, Margaret Sanger wrote of, quote, schools for the blind, deaf, and mute, and homes for the feeble-minded and epileptic that, quote, our eyes should be opened to the terrific cost to the community of this dead weight of human waste. You can get her book, Saying That, at the Denver Public Library. Sanger's Pivot of Civilization, page 112. Planned Parenthood still honors her. Tonight on Bob and Yurt Live on KWHD TV 53, see footage the networks will not show you. That's TV 53 at 10.
If aborted fetuses. That is incorrect. I don't have that reference.
Well,
if
you're going to maintain it's incorrect, you're going to have to tell me when it was.
Well, I can't do it now, but I'll email it.
Don't say it's incorrect.
I have worked with aborted fetuses. I have during the course of my scientific studies, and I don't believe that the things that I have dealt with in the lab situation, which have come from abortions, are human beings. They look like them. They resemble them in physically, but they are not human beings.
Good Lord. I mean, this is concentration camp
language. The question is, though, I suppose,
if they look like human beings, but they know they're not. They're Jews.
I mean,
I'm puzzled by that.
It's amazing. They're not human beings. It's the oldest thing in the book, isn't it? Before you kill, you dehumanize. You say they're not really. No. I'm not. This isn't any kind of killing of a human being. It's something else. We declassify it. We give it another name. Give me strength. You believe it, but it's the most perfect illustration of the position in which the person who acknowledges no absolute law gets himself into. He can argue himself within 10 minutes into the most appalling positions without even realizing that they're appalling.
I mean, I suppose that the point that is being made here, Adam, is what gives you the moral authority to decide when a human life begins.
He's a scientist, that's what.
Science doesn't inform my morality at all. The second question in this is, so there's a scientific point at which we fail to agree on, and science doesn't have a decent answer for, which is, at what point does a fetus become a human? We've talked about that. And the second point is why I feel morally justified in supporting abortion in principle, which is to do, I believe, with the mother's right to choose her own destiny, and to the extent that it is An adult human is more important than an unborn, unsentient fetus. And I believe that is a moral absolute. Stop the tape.
Unsentient? What an ego this pro-abort has. He will stand before God, and the children he advocated killing will be there testifying against him. I don't think Peter Hitchens gets around to answering the claim that the adult human is more important than a fetus. An adult is not more important than a baby. Let's continue.
Moral absolute. And I don't see how you could argue against that.
You don't see how you could argue against it?
I can see how you can arrive at your conclusion.
I used to believe it, this piffle, but I can perfectly well see how you arrive at it. You can't see how anyone can imagine that the what you call a fetus might be human and that it might be wrong to kill it.
Well,
you really
can't see that the woman's
right to choose doesn't somehow interfere with the unborn child. Right to live,
the unborn.
If you're dealing with these rights, or it doesn't have one, or is that right so small? And what is this right to choose? On what grounds is it exercised exactly? What do you have to prove these days to establish that you can choose to kill this person who, in your view, isn't a human, and in my view, is, but might be.
I'm not arguing that abortions should be available freely available to everyone as a means of contraception that you've asserted
occurred in Russia. So what limits would you put upon it?
I believe that education about sex education is important in preventing the negative aspects of sex.
Ever since we had sex education, we've had more abortion. We've had more out of wedlock and early pregnancy. We've had more sexually transmitted disease. I can't actually establish, because the work hasn't been done, that sex education leads to these things. But if its stated purpose is to reduce them, then it has failed abjectly.
Stop the tape. I was on the state mandated accountability committee for Adams County District 12 for the district in the high school. And I resigned. The Denver Post reran my resignation letter 3 years after I resigned, because when I did, I said that their sex ed program is going to increase pregnancy among the students, and it exploded to where we had 104 babies born in one school year at one high school, Adams City High School. Gateway High School down the street in Aurora had 80 babies born. So Peter Hitchens on this is dead right.
That sex education leads to these things, but if its stated purpose is to reduce them, then it has failed abjectly ever since it began.
It's a
mathematical connection. In this country, sex education has been accompanied by an increase in all the things it claims to prevent and contain.
Well, you assert that, and correlation and causation are not the same. But let me ask you this then: in place of sex education, which attempts to reduce the negative aspects of sex, such as unwanted pregnancies and STDs, what would you have in its place?
I wouldn't have anything in its place. I don't think it's the business of schools to teach people how to put condoms on hockey sticks and bananas. I think the schools are not there for this purpose. I think sex education, I think what George Lukács thought when he introduced it during the Hungarian Bolshevik uprising was always an attempt to debauch and demoralize Christian societies. That's what its purpose is.
But children are going to have sex. Teenagers are going to have sex. Yes.
Are they?
Yes.
Are you sure? Are they going to have sex under all circumstances?
16-year-olds shouldn't have sex.
Stop the tape.
Children will meet the lowest expectations that society puts on them. And if society tells children that they're animals, then it should not be shocked when they behave like animals.
16-year-olds shouldn't have sex.
I'm saying that people shouldn't have sex outside marriage. That's my belief.
And so how do you engender that? So I don't believe there are any...
By having a strong moral system which makes it plain that this is how people should behave.
And you think that will prevent teenagers from having sex with each other?
You know, to a large extent, yes, it will. No human system is infallible. Humans are, as we know, or as I know, fallen creatures. So yes, there will be people who defy that morality. But you don't actually need to make much effort to study our own society's past to see just how much horror and dislike were actually directed against adultery and against premarital and extramarital sex, and how our society was different. You may say that it was worse than it was, and I may say that it was better, but there's absolutely no question that a strong morality generally accepted changes the behaviour of society and makes it different. And one of the things it makes different is the attitude towards children, who in our society are disposable in the womb and neglected and tossed aside in life, with catastrophic consequences.
We are going to have to take another break, I'm afraid, at this point, and we'll be actually starting to...
Stop the tape. So that is the conclusion of the debate on abortion. And for this episode of Bob and Yurt Live, thank you for joining us. This is one of the issues that we've come back to over the last 28 years of broadcasting. It's a bedrock human rights issue, the right to life, and that we were created in God's image and God's likeness. And without a recognition of God, then we cannot have a just civil society. Thanks for tuning in. Our website, kgov.com. If you're interested, right there, click on our YouTube link, and we'll get this show. We'll put it up on YouTube, right, guys? Yeah. And then make sure to subscribe and hit the bell, whatever that means. God bless you guys.